Peace and greetings. You're now listening to Rise of the Divine Feminine podcast with your host, Goddess Queen Jamila Asata Osset. We're in season 5. This season is all about Black women finding pieces and parts of themselves abroad. What is it like to find home outside of the land that you were born in? Welcome. Let's go.
All right. So give thanks and praise. We are officially on season 5, Rise of the Divine Feminine podcast. And this is the juicy part of the podcast. This is the part of the podcast where we really get to explore topics that are relevant in real time and every day that apply to a lot of us, you know, that we may just want to discuss and may not have the audience or the room or the set of people. This is the place where we can actually do that. So the first thing I want to do before I jump off on the plug twice is introduce my guest, Lilac Calandra. And I want to give you an opportunity to just speak to the audience and let them know who you are, where you are, where you live, where you're from. Just give a little brief introduction.
Absolutely. Blessings, first of all, to you, Goddess. Thank you for having me on. I'm deeply honored. You know, I know you don't play about your babies. I know, you know, I understand. Like, you respect your space. So who you have in your space, I feel deeply honored. I'm honored to be here. And blessings to everyone who's going to hear this. My name is Lilac Calandra. Originally, I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. But July of last year, I made the move to South Africa. And currently, though, I'm in Ghana. So I'm just trying to, you know, make my way around and experience the motherland in a way that is healthy, right? And in a way that I need to experience it, forgetting all of the things that, you know, we've been told, forgetting all the preconceived notions that I may have had, you know, and wrapping everything up in doing what's best for my mental, spiritual, and physical well-being. So it's been a wild ride. And I'm excited to continue on the journey. In my profession, I am a marriage and family therapist and a mindfulness life coach. And so having to work on my own mental health, right, while helping other people can sometimes be a difficult task. But definitely being on the continent has given me the space and the freedom to just be, to just exist, and to just feel comfortable in my own skin. So it's been a great journey of shedding the versions of myself that now I no longer need, and taking on the versions that are going to take me on the next step of my journey. That's been my journey. So I can't wait to unpack that.
Good thing. That's a beautiful introduction. I have to say that, like, I love the intro because it feels very thorough. Let's start there. I think it's really important to acknowledge the confusion, the pathway, like the journey, like there's so many different layers. And one thing that you said in the intro was unpacking. Okay. Unpacking. And since this season is really about being on the spiritual journey, but finding yourself at home in a land that you weren't born in, I want to know more about that process of unpacking. Specifically, did you bring your baggage with you to South Africa and have to unpack it there? Or did you unpack before you got to South Africa and then realize that there was more unpacking that you had to do? What has been the process of unpacking for you?
Oh, such a great question. So when I had to visit the first time, it was January of 2024. And I was working with this company that was helping diasporans, you know, who wanted to come to the continent, either to move or just visit, who wanted to invest in business. It was in South Africa. And as soon as I got off the plane and my feet touched the soil, like, that land called me home. It said, come back. And I, mm-hmm. who am I to say no? You know what I mean? South Africa was like, okay, come home. And I went back to the States, and I started unpacking and packing at the same time, which is an odd thing. I had to pack up everything I'd kind of known about my origins, you know, where I've been, what I've been doing, my history, my ancestors. I had to pack all that stuff up, and then I had to unpack it at the same time, because in order for me to make the journey over, there's so much I had to let go. So it was a little back and forth. You know, Goddess, while I was packing up my stuff, you know, to make the huge move to South Africa, there were a lot of things that I threw out. I mean, spiritually, I mean, physically, I mean, I believe as it is in the natural, so is in the spiritual, right? So as I'm throwing out clothes, I'm repenting because I was so gluttonous. I had so much stuff that I never used. Stuff still had tags on it and still in the back. Never used it, just purchased it, just bought it. You know what I mean? Just had it in excess, never used it. So as I was letting it go and throwing it out, I was releasing that version of myself. I was letting that part of myself go that wore those clothes or that bought that, you know what I mean? Or that utilized that stuff during that season of my life. And so I had to really unpack that. And I had a purple couch I got in college. I had to let go. I'm not taking that with me. A version of myself who bought that couch, who lived on that couch, who did all this, was I let
Sorry.
That, I let that version go with that.
Mm-hmm. 1 second, let me pause you. Can I ask that we come off of video, because you're lagging, and I'm afraid that there's some parts that won't be caught. Just so everybody knows, everyone who's listening on Spotify knows, we started doing a video on to record this podcast today. But baby, we is on the internet, and it is African internet is doing its internet thing. So I apologize for the lags. I apologize for any disruption that that may cause. So just disregard this if you are listening currently on the podcast. So let me, yes. Okay. So please continue, sis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And man, that's such a good call, you know, because that's an adjustment you have to make. You used to, you know, great Wi-Fi always working, but you know, you just have to make an adjustment. And it's like, we still have Wi-Fi, it's just, you know, we have to just dial down on, and that's okay. So I was, you know, like, okay, I was sharing about letting most of my stuff go. I came over to South Africa with five suitcases. Yep, I had five suitcases. I didn't ship anything. I came over with five suitcases. And I had to let a lot of stuff go. And as I let it go physically, I was saying I was letting it go spiritually and letting those things go that I no longer needed, because I wanted to make space. You know, that's the unpacking. I wanted to make space. I didn't want to bring that baggage over. So I was leaving things behind and having, you know, trash removal come and junk removal come and pick up a lot of stuff. That was me unpacking. And that was me making space for everything that I needed to. In Africa, everything I needed to receive once I got to the continent. And then what did happen is I did find more stuff to unpack, because it's one leave and then go, you know, to another country, and then living there and experiencing that. I wasn't just on vacation anymore. I wasn't just a tourist anymore. If you move to your home, you can't just be doing Amazon in America anymore so much. You have to find what you like there. You have to find different things. You have to find, you know, the all the different things. Cleaning products. You have to find what you like. You know what I mean? It's definitely different things I had to unpack there. I am grateful that I was able to unpack a lot before I came, because I would have been too full and I wouldn't have had enough space to take on all the emotions and feelings that came actually moving there, not just being a tourist anymore.
Whew, that's such a thorough answer, and I really appreciate you walking us through the visual of what the process looked like for you. But I'd like to kind of peel it back a little bit. When you talk about the energy, like, you know, just all the things that you had, what did that actually like represent? What lay for you was wrapped up in the things? Like, what version of yourself can you clearly see now that you may not even have noticed that you were living in at that time that you were
in? Oh, man, another dope question. So I think that I'm always going to be a recovering people pleaser, right? I'm in recovery, right? Mm-hmm. So that people pleasing, I definitely was able to really let that go. I mean, when you're 5, And now I've moved the furthest of my parents' children. I mean, I didn't ask anyone permission to move. I told them that I was moving and left them, with how they wanted to deal with it. Also, the version of me that needed validation from other people to know my worth. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't hear that I was doing a good job, then I didn't believe it. You know what I mean? Like, if someone didn't clap for me, if someone didn't say congratulations or this is wonderful, that what I was doing was beneficial or impactful. Those versions I can clearly see have been left. You know what I mean? Have been left in America, and even I had to remove more versions of those versions of myself, even when I got to South Africa. So the people pleasing for sure, and knowing my own worth, whether someone claps for me or not, whether someone bigs me up or not, that I know that my life is impactful and that I'm doing not just a good job, but I'm living out my purpose. So those are two distinct versions that I can see that I've distanced myself from for sure.
Now, when you say that you are a recovering people pleaser,
Hey.
has a ring to it. Okay, ring, the ring. And for many of the women who are listening right now, like that's very, very relatable, just knowing that there's a part of them that that is still into people pleasing. And
Definitely.
I just have to say for the record, when it comes to Black women, some part of me doesn't really identify it as people pleasing. I kind of identify it as normalized societal expectations.
Sure.
We've had to adhere to standards that we never agreed to. We've had to exceed the standard, whatever was standard for something, some institution. We've always had to be excellent in order
Times
to be
ten,
approved.
yes.
We've always had to go above and beyond. We've always had to
Yes.
increase our skill set in order to be a valued member of any team, of any group. We've always had to prove ourselves in relationships, whether it be romantic or, just personal friendship. There's always been this bar, this bar that existed for Black women in the West that didn't necessarily exist for everyone else. It did that, but everybody don't have that. Latinas didn't have that. Asian people didn't have
Nope.
that. White people certainly didn't have that. Like, there's always just this bar of standardized, this system of excellence, standardized excellence. And I want to know more about some of what you've observed from the women in South Africa. Like, are you seeing that same high standard of excellence or unrealistic expectation that people please look at differently after having lived in South Africa and seeing the women there and how they move and carry themselves?
Firstly, I mean, I agree with what you were saying that people pleasing is just the societal norm, and we have to do times 10. And even our parents and elders reinforce that. Like, if white people are doing this, you have to do 10 times better, 5 times better. It's like they instill that in us very early, and that type of pressure is what breaks someone's back and causes a breakdown just in general. But in South Africa, so I'm in Johannesburg. Now, Johannesburg is different than the rest of South Africa. You know what I mean? Like, once you get outside of Johannesburg, Limpopo, those are places where you have more farmland, villages, and things like that. Johannesburg is very westernized. Tons of, skyscrapers, restaurants, businesses, and things like that. Like, to make people feel the comfort of the West without having to leave the continent. But even in that, right, even in a lot of the westernization, I'm looking at these women who wear their culture so proudly, and they are proud of who they are, and they're proud of their big hips, and they're proud of, their body shapes and their, like their skin types, and you can just tell there's a cultural proudness that is instilled from them as a child, because the way they walk, the way they just, it's just, there's a level of confidence that is so beautiful to see. You know what I mean? And it's not confidence because I have to show off. It's not confidence because I have to prove myself to anyone. It's just confidence because I know who I am and I'm comfortable being who I am. That it's beautiful to see, and I love it so much. definitely from the women, you know, and they're kind of spicy, you know, they're spicy. They don't take too much mess. You know, you're gonna give them what they want, and that's that, or you're gonna hear about it and you'd rather just give it for the first time. I see how they interact, you know, male female relationships, but just like anywhere, you know, they say what they mean and mean what they say. So then that even goes back to the level of confidence that's there. They know who they are, and their knowing is rooted in their cultural identity that is birthed in them and then reinforced in the village, in the community, by their family and friends. So that's something that I really love to see.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And would you say that, or I guess maybe, you know, I'm very aware, me myself as a person, and I'm aware of how my interactions with people in their homeland, how those interactions oftentimes are my personalized lesson. Like that, yeah. It was just, it's like, these are my teachable moments. And I will say that for me, living in Tanzania is one of the most passive, aggressive, like laid back, calm, peace be unto you, salam alaikum. It is, listen, they don't want no smoke. Don't nobody want no smoke. Okay. This is a slow moving, pole, pole, leggy, leggy. Like, this, we gonna get there when we get there. Okay. This is just like, the vibration here is not, it's the opposite of whatever the Western vibration is. Like, we not doing none of that. We're not going on a hamster wheel. We're not doing that. And so a big part of the reason why I chose Tanzania was because of that, because I recognized that my son and I, after spending years and years in Atlanta, you know, that's where he was born and raised, after years and years, I'm like, oh, this boy needs some peace. Because Atlanta is ganging. Atlanta is gang. Atlanta is lit. Okay. He needs some peace. He needs some pole pole. He needs some slow moving vibrations. He needs to be able to just be in himself and get to know him on a different level, you know, have that space to figure who he's becoming. But I've learned recently for me is that I needed to be here in order to observe these women, okay, and observe this energy that I don't see in the States at all when it comes to us. I don't see this level of softness. And I'm big on teaching about the soft life. I'm big on teaching about relaxing into divine femininity. I'm big on teaching about those things, but oftentimes I don't see them displayed at a consistent level to where I can say, this is what you should be looking at, you know? And there's a difference between being soft and being passive. Okay. That we're not talking about being passive. We're talking about soft energy, right? And I have to clarify what softness is, because there is a movement that we know as a soft life movement. You heard of that, right? You know, soft life movement.
Yes.
Right, okay. That's some nonsense. Let's just call a spade a spade. A lot of that soft life stuff is based off aesthetics. It's based on topical fixes, you know, going to the spa or not paying 50-50, right, not paying any bills. Like, those things are not what I'm speaking about. When I speak about softness, what I speak about is a state of being. And in that state of being, one does not feel obligated to do a goddamn thing for another. In that state of being, one feels completely comfortable in one's own skin. If one does not want to jump up and assist, one does not jump up and assist. There is no perpetual anxiety about how much one has given, because just being is enough. Just being is enough. What I seen from women here in this country is a level of softness that doesn't require them to do the most, because there's a generosity, there's a layer of abundance that exists. You know, I grew up observing women prove themselves to their friends. Like, I got to do this because I'm ride or die for my friend. This is my A1. I got to be loyal to her. Like, all of this stuff is you proving yourself to someone who should already recognize who the fuck you are. If that's your friend. If that's your friend, okay?
Correct.
And case in point, there was a video. I don't know if you saw the video, Lily, but there was a video posted maybe 2 weeks ago. I don't know. Anyways, it was a video of a young lady in a car, and she was driving, it was a video of a girl who was in the passenger side. Her friend was driving, and her friend was going off on her. Did you see that video?
I did not see that.
Okay, the friend was going off on her. The friend was going off on her because it was the driver's birthday. The girl who was driving was her birthday. And the passenger, who was the friend, showed up in an outfit that the driver felt like made her look less. And how dare you show up on my birthday looking better than me? How dare you? Okay? So the mentality that we've had on what loyalty looks like and how much we have to prove and how much we have to do. We can't just be, we have to do. We can't just be, we have to do. We have to help. We have to assist. We have to lead. We got to be smart. We got to be N-I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that means? Girl, we're tired. So
tired.
So when we talk about soft life, when I speak about soft life, when I speak about softness, I speak about that from a place of being. And that place of being is so foreign to us as a group of Black women who have gotten used to doing, proving, showing, demonstrating, ganging, taking care of. There's a whole ING movement at the end of everything that we've had to do. We can't just be. We have to do. We have to do. Okay. So I have learned so much from observing these women and how little they do. You know, there's no need to prove anything. There's no need to demonstrate. There's no need to be, you know, a certain way. There's just a lot that I've learned from observing these women. And what I realize is that even aside from the environment and the peaceful vibration of being in this country, that there is another layer of my spiritual journey that involves me sinking in deeper into that softness, into that level of softness where I see that it's time for me to take groceries out of the my back and do that. And it's not, at this point, it's not my job. You know, I can just be where I walk in the house for an occasion and I don't have to jump in the kitchen and ask what y'all need me to do to help. I can just come in and sit down. I can come in and sit down and relax and enjoy myself. There was a situation yesterday. I was out at a women's meeting and one of the sisters got up in a rush. You know, her and an elder got up and I was concerned, like, is everything with that elder okay? But I resisted the urge to jump into that action and to be in that place of urgency, you know, and be in that problem solver energy. So I say all that to say that I am acutely now aware of how being here, not just being in the land and not just interacting, but really being in a place of observation has really allowed me to see my next level of growth and expansion, you know, in this divine femininity. And I'm just curious, you know, can you see, or what can you see, either reflectively present or that has already started to transpire? What can you see about your time in South Africa, and how it intertwines? What can you see in terms of that interconnection between your spiritual journey and South Africa, your personal journey and South Africa itself?
You know, firstly, I agree with everything you said, especially, you know, about divine femininity. In South Africa, my femininity is allowed to flourish. It's allowed to bloom. It's allowed to come up. This is just me speaking. In America, a lot of African American women, we're raised to be like men. We're raised to be very masculine and to take care of everything, not just the normal nurturing, but we have to hold up the whole house. And we have, you know, it's the culture of everything is on your shoulders, and it's made men very lazy. And this is not me bashing, it's just a reality. It's made men very lazy. We have made men not have to do a lot of work because we'll do it. They know that we're not going to let the ship sink, and they know that we're going to pick up the slack and we're going to cover it. We're going to pay for it. And it has really caused the great divide and more stress on us. Right. And if we really look back, and even in history, big mamas passing away and Nana and all, you know, our elders going not even so soon, but just in misery, just in depression. And because they had to carry everything with very little help. And I love what you said about the soft life, right? That right. Soft life now is very materialistic. It's like, okay, I don't have to pay for anything, and I can drive a nice car, and I can go on trips. No, that's beautiful. But if you come back to your home and you are not able to really exist in that space, then it's like, okay, you're just doing this for a moment. Soft life is a lifestyle. It's not just something you do for a week in Mexico or Hawaii. It's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Every day you wake up, you choose to be in that way. You choose to have your heart be that way. Your mind was really able to do that in South Africa. And even what you were saying about taking the groceries in and things, there are men, they get upset if I try to reach for something, if I try to grab something, because it takes unlearning. And we go back to the unpacking. I'm used to picking up things, grabbing stuff. You know, my parents got divorced when I was 11 going on 12. If my brother wasn't home to take out the trash, who was taking out the trash? Me. It was. Forget about the gender. Oh, boys take out the trash. My brother, he might have been gone for a while. That trash was going out because it needed to go out. So you get used to just doing certain things. You're single for a long time. You know, you end up just doing certain things. You pay your own bills. You have your own place. You have your own stuff. You do your own things. But in Africa, and specifically where I am in South Africa, men will almost be something heavy or anything like that. And it took a little while to adjust to that, because I'm like, oh. And these men weren't being this way because they wanted something from me. This is just who they are at their core. To protect the woman is to protect the entire community, right? Because the women are the pillars. And I don't mean the head. I'm not even getting on that discussion. I mean the pillars. I mean, we're the portals, we're the life bringers. You know what I mean? Like, it babies, you know, feed off of us. It's just the way it is. And so they protect women in such a way that is beautiful. And when women are allowed to really walk in that divine feminine nature, that's when we flourish the best. We're able to exist in that. That's when we can soar in our spiritual journey. We can soar to the highest heights. Clarity is there, because if I don't have to worry about taking on things and doing this and picking up this and having to carry the slack and all that, if I don't really have to worry about that because I know it's getting done, then I'm able to have so much clarity and focus and direction, because all this other stuff isn't clouding my path of my journey. That's kind of how it's impacted my spiritual journey. Like, when I'm allowed to just exist in just the feminine part of me, just the beautiful, that's the real soft life, the soft side of me. I'm just allowed to be there because I am a woman, and because I have men around me who don't want me to, to lift or to do this or to carry this or to move this. I love that. You know what I mean? And I found myself just in a clearer space, a more focused space, and closer to the creator, because I don't have all that static, all that noise, all this anxiety. I have to figure this out. I have to worry about this. I have to do this. I'm worried about this. I don't, if all that stuff is cleared away, then I can hear from the Most High so clear. And I'm grateful for that. So it all comes full circle. And I it's really an encouragement to see. And I really try to share that with the woman in my life. You know, like you don't have to be a pack mule. You don't have to be a pack horse. You don't have to have things so piled on you. Just come over the continent to see. You are able to release so many things and to unburden yourself and to exist and live and how we were created to live and exist. Because in the States, we're living in a way that we weren't created to. And that's why it starts to weigh on us so heavy, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, all that.
That's really lovely. And in a weight format, so I can actually visualize it, you know, because it is a burden. It is a burden. We end up carrying it unknowingly. We carry it because part of us thinks that we have to carry it. You know, there's just so many obligations. There's always so many obligations. There's always, you got to do this, and you know, you have to look out for this person and that person. So it's like before we're even able to speak. And this is one of the reasons why I say I have a whole soapbox that I have to preach on when I talk about the fact that I need people to stop praising this concept of being their ancestors' wildest dreams, meaning that the bigger burden that they have to carry means that is the celebration. It's not the celebration. When I hear people talk about these type of things, I always imagine a newborn baby, right? Like imagine that you're a newborn baby in a hospital. And you're fresh, like you just got here, you know, your umbilical cord just got cut, you know, you popping up, all these lights in your face, like it's a lot going on, right? And as you're settling into this new body and this new existence and the parents that you chose and the life that you chose and all the things that you chose, what you see energetically is that instead of somebody wheeling in a trust for you or saying, wow, Lilac has arrived, let's bring flowers, let's bring gold, right? Because Jesus got frankincense and myrrh. So instead of that, what you see is this little baby is now the recipient of somebody's trash. What you're essentially saying energetically, I was the one chosen to carry my ancestral burdens, okay? I was the one who was chosen to carry forth the trauma and to amend it. Like, this is asinine, people. I don't know if anybody, if you're listening to this, if you're hearing this, if you're hearing my voice right now, you got to stop doing that. Yeah. You got to stop doing that. Because, yes, there is beauty in healing. Yes, there is beauty in responsibility. But the way that you all are romanticizing the concept of burdening the next generation, not I'm giving the next generation land. Because in Africa, where we now live, we know that parents bequeath land to their children. Their offspring are the recipients of compounds, acreages, okay? Mm-hmm. We may be recipients to businesses and enterprises that were started right before we reach adolescence. Those type of things are things that we observe in real time, living on the motherland, right? But in Western Black lingo, we have to acknowledge that there's just too much fanfare around this concept of inherited trauma. There's just entirely too much fanfare around it. And when I hear you talk about the burden, I can't help but to be reflective on how much of a burden people are consistently inviting into their life by by picking up trash that was left by their grandmother or their great grandmother. You mean to tell me? So it's either you went out to the dumpster and got it, or you're to the when you were born, that you were born to do this. You were born to clean up her trash. Is that what you're saying? Because I just wanted to make sense for the record. Because it doesn't make, if my grandmother loved me, okay, my grandmother tried to do everything she could in her power to assist me while I was here on this earth. And I just can't for the life of me seeing her saying, you know what? You know what? Matter of fact, I got some old wounds. I got some old pain. You know what I'm saying? That I didn't get to deal with when I was here on earth. Let me go and get that to you. When you get here. Okay?
Right.
Baby girl, I ain't got no money for you. I ain't got no silver and gold. But I got these problems. Make it make sense. Are other races doing this?
They're not. You know, no, they're not. And not in the level that we're getting it.
Especially
in the States. They're not doing it. They're not doing it. They're not doing it to the level that African American women. They're not doing it to that level. Because and the reality is, even if it's given to us, we have to learn the art of rejection, that we have to reject that, and we don't have to pick it up, you know. And what you said is true, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, because I even used to be like that, goddess. Like, I'm like, oh, you know, this is my burden to carry. You know, when you're a generational, you're like, there's just certain things I have to carry. I don't. You know what I mean? There are certain things that I don't have to carry, even if it's being offered to me. And what you said is so true. You know, on the continent, the inheritance looks so much different. And it's not like all families are perfect. It's not like there's no fighting and there's no toxic traits. No, every family has its own issues, no matter where you are on the entire globe, in the galaxy. Every family has its own issues. But when you realize the importance of when I am no longer here on this earth, that when I am no longer here, that children, and then you leave them the land, you leave them the business, and it's land you own. It's not like you leave them a house and then the land is owned by other people, right? Which is what you used to experience in. You can buy a house in the States, but the land is not yours. And so we're talking about eminent domain. We're talking about if they want to put a highway right through your home. Hey, you got to pack it up. It is realizing the importance of that. No matter what I'm going through, I'm going to leave my children with something that they can pass on. And everything is an inheritance. You know what I mean? Either you're going to pass down that trauma, or you're going to pass down something that is going to make sure that your generations, you and after you and after you, are flourishing. So no, it's not done in that level, even with other races. Because even if a mom, I'm thinking of other races, like each other, they work together. Okay, I'm speaking to Chinese people. The Lees and the Chungs might not like each other, but they're gonna get together, they're gonna get a business going, and they're gonna have something for the legacy of their children. They might not like each other. When they get in a room, they might not hang out with each other, but they put that aside and they say, we're gonna work together. You see it with Jewish people, Chinese people, Indians. You see it with everyone else. But when it comes to us, right, the only thing that we're really passing down for real, until you look at the generations coming up now, all these older generations, right, all they had to give us was trauma, and hurt, and shame, and guilt, and a lot of spiritual abuse. And when you look at it from that perspective, especially in the church, and you look at it from that perspective, you're like, I reject this, and I don't want this. And so
I don't want it, and I don't have to have it.
It's not, right. This is not the inheritance that I want. There are people, you know, when you do your last will and testament, you know, there are people who say, you know what, I don't want this. And so when the will is being read and you hear your name called next to some trauma, you can absolutely say, I don't want this. This is not what I want. I don't want this. I'm not taking this on. And if I have to create my own inheritance to pass down, if I have to start over from scratch, if I have to reject everything that my family has tried to pass down so I can create a new something, That is what I'll have to do. And that is what I found, that, man, I am rejecting so much that has been given and passed down knowingly and unknowingly, right? Because if you're not getting the help you need, if you're not taking the spiritual journey that you need, then you oftentimes unknowingly pass down stuff that is only going to keep getting passed down. I am the barrier. I am the blockage. I am the stop sign. I'm the barricade saying that for my next generations, I'm not passing that down to you guys. It's the buck really does stop here. And what I pass down is going to be generational wealth, generational openness and calmness and peace and a spiritual awakening and understanding that I wish I got. And that's no shade to my past elders, my family members. They didn't have the capacity. And so I have to pass it down. I have to put a stop to that inheritance. I don't want it. I'm shutting that off. I'm good with that. Scratch my name off that will. And then I have to restart over so that what's left for my children and their children and their children is something that'll keep the generations going. It's a choice that we have to make. And that's hard. It's easier said than done. But when you make the choice to reject, when you make the choice to say, I'm no longer going to take this anymore, that is the true spiritual awakening. And your eyes are opened and you see yourself in a whole different light. And it's a beautiful, scary thing all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. I want to make sure I acknowledge that, you know, in discussing this, it's a very sensitive topic, right? So there may be someone, you know, listening. If you're listening right now, sis, and you like, I mean, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams. You absolutely positively are. You absolutely positively are. This is not an attempt to diminish any accomplishments that you've made or anything that you have done that has furthered your entire lineage, that has furthered your bloodline. This is not that. I just want to be clear for the record. What I am saying to you as lovingly as I can possibly say it is that for a very, very, very long time, our matrilineal lineage has carried burdens that were that never belonged to them in the first place. Okay, our matrilineal lineage was conditioned, mentally conditioned by society to believe that they had to go above and beyond and sacrifice themselves, sacrifice their joy, sacrifice their pleasure. If we open up the door to talking about the sacrifices that Black women have made when it comes to pleasure, we will be here until Jesus, the Jesus,
hey, hello.
Okay, the Yah and the Way. Okay. Huh? Until that one comes and descends on. If we talk about the sacrifice of joy and pleasure and ecstasy, because those are things that were we've been work horses for hundreds of years. And what I'm saying to you is that I know without a shadow of a doubt that your matrilineal lineage does not want you to celebrate in the space and in the ideology of give thanks and praise, I get to do more work. As if life was not heavy enough, as if there aren't enough challenges, give thanks and praise, I get to do my mess and clean up my mess here on this earth plane. And I'm totally here and totally happy about cleaning up somebody else's mess. That's not what they gave you. That's just not it. I want you to know, period. I want you to put a period on the end of what I'm saying. I want you to know, period, that your grandmother, your great grandmother, your great, great, great grandmother, you're the greatest of the grandmothers, the whole entire lineage, they celebrate when they see you relax. They celebrate when they see you at peace. They celebrate when they see you smiling. That is their celebration. Their celebration is not your suffering. They don't celebrate. They don't delight in that. They don't say, look at my girl down there suffering. That's not it.
Just like I did. Suffering just like me.
Just like I did. Show them, pass on them generations or something. No. No. That's not it. That's not it. So it's time for us to put an end to the narrative that keeps us in that space of thinking where we're perpetually embracing, because it's a mental thing first, right? We're mentally embracing this idea that our purpose is to further along our lineage. And what that means for us is not land. Again, we're still on the wrong side of the railroad tracks, because it's not land. You're not saying, let me further my lineage by buying diamonds, because my grandmother never owned diamonds. That could potentially be a way to further the lineage. You're not saying, let me further my lineage by buying every single one of my children their own house, or making sure that my nieces have an antique tea set. That's not goals. The goals are to fully commit to a level of suffering that not only meets where we are in this layer of life, but that sinks down to the ancestral levels of suffering.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what I'm saying. Herein lies the problem. You made a statement, Lila, that I want to go back to. Mm. And truth be told, we could really be here all night. We could really be here all night, girl, because we really just getting started. I feel like I ain't really asked you nothing yet. Like, we ain't even really getting to talk yet. But I want to go back to a statement you made, because you said something and I feel like, okay, she brushed over that, but we gotta put a spotlight on that. You said something about being in South Africa and having men assist you in a particular sort of way. Did I hear that correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay. And what I wanted to do is just kind of reverse on that, because child, this condition is so deep. Not only have we been taught to do it ourselves, but we've also developed a high level of resistance towards people helping us.
Yep. Absolutely.
Girl, you got to do it on your own, but we've also developed a high level of resistance that says, no, 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 don't help me. Okay? And as confusing as that might be, for those who know, you know, that there is a level of guilt that shows its head when you have to get assistance. That's why one of our favorite lines is, I don't ask nobody for nothing.
I don't even
ask nobody for nothing. Okay? Let's be clear, right? What was it like to, as a self-described people pleaser, what was it like for you to actually accept help? What was it like for you to say, you know what? It's go ahead and carry that for me, you know? Because sometimes that in and of itself is another struggle. That in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Because I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that means? That man said, I love it because she got her own. Do you realize that this is all conditioning?
Yeah.
Why would you say that? When she says she got it, why you like a woman paying for stuff for you? Why? Like the song, even the music.
It's wild.
In this space where it's encouraging this, all the women who independent. Like, come on. What was it like for you? Was that an easy thing for you to allow help? Tell me about that.
Yeah. It's so funny, you know, once you're out of a certain bubble, you start really realizing how conditioned you were, right? Hearing all those songs and the promotion of independent women. I mean, now if there's toxic masculinity, then I also think there's toxic femininity in that same vein, where it's like, I'm going to bash the man to the point where it's like, you know, I don't feel like I need anybody. No, we need each other. And that's the reality of it, right? We need to be in a healthy relationship with each other, everyone knowing their boundaries and what's going on. But that really does encourage women to say, I don't need a man, and then expand it, right? I don't need anyone. So for me, I'm a Virgo. Well, I'm a Virgo too. So we're very independent creatures just by nature. Like, I'll do it myself. I'm not trying to be rude. I just know that I'm particular and I like things done a certain way. And instead of me getting upset for you doing it, let me just save all that energy and say, I'll do it right. Now, in Africa, I want to hear you give a rebuttal to their help. And that's what I need, right? I can be hard-headed. I can have a strong personality. But I need a man or that don't even give me the option. And it's not like male chauvinism or misogyny where it's like, oh, no, it's like, I said I'm going to help you. That's what I'm doing. And if whatever resistance that was trying to rise up, it couldn't compare. Like, it couldn't compete. It couldn't be like, oh, if I hinted at, oh, I want to do it, there was nothing that it just was not in existence anymore for me. Like, no, I got it. No, there was none of that. They were going to help me. They went to grab it. No, they didn't ask me if I needed help. They just took it. And I, for me, I needed that because that helped me adapt a little more. That you're picking it up, you're taking it. I would walk into my place with groceries. I wouldn't have to worry about that. It would be a wrap, grabbing the bags, doing that. Okay, awesome, wonderful. You know what I mean? But it wasn't like, do you need me to help you with this? Because some people, I mean, and I think it varies on who you are. For me, if you ask, do you need me to help you? My answer is always going to be no. I want to be honest. It's always going to be no. I'm always going to be saying no. But if you just take it and you just say, okay, I got this, that helped me. And that's what I found. It wasn't even a chance for me to be like, oh no, I'm all set. Because even if I uttered that, and even if I said that, the looks I would get, or like, just like the scoff, you know, that African scoff, like, you know, the sounds they make, like, it would be like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I wasn't necessarily asking you. So that helped me to adjust better. Because that wasn't asked if I needed help. Help was given to me because I'm a woman, and they wanted to honor me in that way.
Right.
Helpful. And again, I can be hard-headed, I can be stubborn, and I need men in my life who are not going to put up with that. And they're not going to bash me down, but they're just them operating in their masculinity allows me to still flourish in my femininity and say, they got it, and I'm all set, and we're good. So that's the journey, and every day it gets better and better and better, where I don't feel like I have to resist and say, no, I got it. I don't even need to utter that. Because if I try to utter it, it's not even acknowledged, which is what I love, because that helps me get over it.
I love that. I really appreciate you using the word need, you know, when you say, I need, you know, my man. I need black men. And I appreciate that honesty, because there has been a deep rooted association with a weakness in vulnerability. Mm-hmm. To be vulnerable, be weak, according to our culture. Mm-hmm. You can't be exposing yourself, girl.
Are you enjoying this episode? If so, head over to freethefeminine.com to take the spiritual evolution quiz. Find out which level of evolution in your spiritual journey you're on right now. See you over at freethefeminine.com.
We should have always had the right to be vulnerable. We should have always had the right to express our emotions and to talk about our feelings and to be in our feelings, like to be in our feelings, to be in our feelings.
Yeah.
Okay. That's something that it seems like it's just missing. All these parts of having this full experience in being a woman. It's just been missing because we've been observed from a hypersexual way in Western culture. Heavy on the hypersexual. heavy on the hypersexual. But meanwhile, there is a a deficit when it comes to just the organic emotions that we as Black women have, you know, whether they be hurt or sadness or even anxiety. You know, everybody else was allowed to fall apart. Everybody else was allowed to be depressed. Everybody else was allowed to struggle through it and to sob through it and to have a bad day. But there's not been enough space for us to have those bad days and to fall apart and to have rage, to be absolutely pissed off, to be absolutely flabbergasted. There has not been enough of that space made for the full spectrum of emotions. And I give thanks because I remember the first country that I really kind of just got comfortable in was Gambia. I had been already, I had already been to Senegal, and then I went to Gambia, and that was the first country I really got comfortable in. And I think part of it was probably the language. You know, because Egypt, everybody's speaking Arabic. Senegal, everybody's speaking Wolof and French. But in Gambia, everybody was speaking English with me. So I was like, okay, yeah, like we can rap, like we can click. And one of the things that I immediately recognized was how free I felt because I didn't feel judgment. I didn't feel like anybody was judging me. I didn't feel judged. I didn't feel judged. I didn't feel like people were like judging me. You know, like when I would chew with my mouth halfway open because the food was so good that I'm talking and chewing and whatever. Nobody's like, nobody's doing that. There's no, it just didn't seem like I had to be in the flow or in the accordance of some of the same norms that I would be aware of if I were still living in Atlanta. And one of those things that I felt that about the most was my emotion. Because when I was, would if something was upsetting to me, let's say I went somewhere and, you know, I'm having a conversation with a shopkeeper or, you know, cashier or something like that, the first thing that they would say is like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, they say that a lot in Tanzania too. They killed. Sorry is like the national word of Tanzania. It's holy.
Same in South Africa. Sorry, if you trip and fall, if you hit your hand, they say sorry. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But that's so significant. And in Ghana, the national word is please. You know, please. Can I take you to the store? Please, can you sit here, please? Like, so there are these words that are part of the culture, but what that does, I don't know if it does that for you. Maybe, you know, some people come and it irritates them. It may vex their soul, but for me, that puts me at ease because I lived in a place where nobody said sorry.
Nobody
said sorry. Like there was no sorry. There was no pole. There was no apology. There's just, it is what it is. We learned that early. It is what it is. It is what it is. That person who came to school with no lunch and they didn't have no lunch money, baby, it is what it is. That person who mama died, you know, a few weeks ago and now she out live with her grandma and she got a movie, won't see her again. It is what it is. We learned to suck it up and deal with it. That was the perpetual message. We at the end of the day gonna end, and it is what it is. Okay, so I really appreciate you using words like need because we weren't supposed to have no needs, Lila. Like, I don't know if you got that memo, girl, but
I got it.
You got that memo?
I did.
We weren't supposed to have no needs. You supposed to make do with what you have and keep it true. Keep it trucking at the end of the day. So, I really love hearing about, you know, just these lessons, these interactions, these ways of seeing things, you know, with the changes that you've made in terms of moving from the States to South Africa. Can I ask if any other lessons or what other parts of the journey you've also found yourself undergoing while in Ghana? I know you're in Ghana right now temporarily, but how have things shifted for you when it comes to your spiritual journey, being in Ghana at the moment?
Man, there, like, I haven't even made it. I've been in Accra for since the 11th. So I'm gonna be headed to Cape Coast sometime in the next upcoming days. So I haven't even made it to the dungeons and the door of no return, which is the door of return now. But even without making it to those significant places yet, I feel my ancestors, and I feel weepy, and I'm always crying because I feel like the circle has been completed. Like we were never supposed to make it back here. We were never, our feet are, were never supposed to touch this soil again. When we were sent away, when we were captured and we were chained and we were put on those ships, we were never supposed to be back here ever. We were supposed to be enslaved for the rest of our lives, from generation to generation to generation. And for us to have made it back here, to have made the full circle, it feels complete. And I do feel my ancestors rejoicing. There's a joy that I feel that I know is not my own, that it's not, I do have joy, but I know it's not my own. And I know it's external joy. And I know it's joy coming from my ancestors who are so happy that I made it back. And I'm so grateful, because most African Americans came from West Africa. So I'm so grateful that my feet are able to touch this soil, because that's an act of rebellion all on its own. In a place we were never supposed to be back to, in a place we were never supposed to reconnect to. And I feel myself reconnecting to myself, right? To things and places in myself that I never knew, that you really can't know it unless you get back to a place where your ancestors came from, right? They cultivated this land and built this place up and tilled the land and sowed here and planted seeds and harvested and raised families and did communities and civilizations and all that. I feel all coming into me, and it's almost like a circuit being turned back on that had been turned off for so long. It was never, the circuit wasn't dead, it was just turned off. It's like a, when you have a blowout, like your circuit blows out, there's too much electricity going somewhere, it blows out. But when that circuit breaker is turned back on, all that electricity is able to flow and power the things that we need to. So it's, for my spirituality, it's, I would just use the word reconnection. I feel myself reconnecting to the land, to the atmosphere, to my purpose, to what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's a lot to deal with. It can be overwhelming at times. I've had to take a lot of time to myself because I feel so much and I'm open to so much. And I know it's because of where I am, and that me, I've made the circle back, and now the circle is complete. And there's even a level of wholeness that I feel that you can't feel until you come back, until you put your feet on the continent soil. You can't feel that until you make the trip. You can be whole, you can be well, you can be doing all the things wherever you are, but where your ancestors came from, that's the connection. Whether you come here to live or just come here to visit, there's a connection and a reconnection that happens that I really encourage everyone to experience at least once in their life, that you feel your ancestors here and welcoming you, embracing you, and filling you with things they could not give us in the States. We, in that atmosphere, we couldn't handle it. We couldn't take it. So we had to come here and be clear and be able to receive from all the things that we needed to receive from. So I'm wading through all those emotions. There's so much, but I love it, and I'm grateful to have made it back. And my family is happy that I made it back, that someone from their lineage, their bloodline, their DNA has made it back and completed the circle.
Yes, thanks and praise. Yes, ma'am. I say. I felt that. Okay. You said it with your chest. Okay. I'm curious for the sister listening who's like, okay, that sounds good, but how do I even know where to go? Like, you in South Africa, you in Ghana, like, how did you know to go to Ghana? Like, how did you know to go to South Africa? Then what would you say to her? Like, what would be your advice, or what would be your message to that sister who's listening right now, who has that as a question?
Yeah, and you know what? If that's you and you're listening, you're like, there are so many places in Africa, countries You know, where we're supposed to be does call us if we're quiet and still enough to listen. And I believe that with my full heart, right? That we'll see it in our algorithm. We'll see if it's Kenya, we'll see videos and pictures of Kenya start coming up, or someone will talk about Kenya. We have to listen and hear, because we get the answers in every single part of our life, right? And so if it's Gambia, if it's Senegal, if it's the Congo, if it's these places, we'll hear it. And we have to take a moment of stillness. Sometimes we're always rushing around, and we were talking about that burden of rushing, of going, moving, shifting. And I came from the north, right? Where you are always running to go get a bus, a train. We walk fast, we talk fast, we move fast. We never get a chance to be still. And so when you take that chance to meditate, to sit in silence and stillness, man, the land will call to you where you need to go, where you want to go. And there might be multiple places you want to visit. Visit as much as your budget can allow, as much as your availability can allow. Visit and hear and give yourself the gift of just stillness and listening. And pay attention, right? There's a level of eye opening that we have to have. Are you seeing things about a certain country in Africa pop up all the time? Zambia, are you seeing certain things pop up? Are people mentioned all the time about a certain country? Is it resonating with you? We will know, right? We will know. Just a starting point. I'm not saying that that's the place that, okay, I heard about Zambia and I'm going to live there for the rest of my life, but maybe that's the place to start. And then from there, you go visit other places. Like my dad moved to Ghana in November. So that was my connection to Ghana. You know, I moved to South Africa. He moved to Ghana, and he's like, you know, when are you going to come visit? And there was just things I needed to get settled, things happening, things going on. And this was my time to come to Ghana. And so I was able to come to Ghana, you know? And so once you get to the place, the point and the goal is just to get there. So listen and hear what place is speaking to you. What place is always, again, on your algorithm. If we're always on social media, that's Instagram, that's TikTok, that's Facebook, that's whatever. What is always popping up for you? Or what in your mind has said, oh, that's a place I always have wanted to visit. Those are the things we have to pay attention. It takes mindfulness and intentionality, right? Those are two keywords I'm going to use. We have to be intentional about this. Where are you supposed to be visiting? That land will tell you, hey, come visit me, if we give it the chance to talk to us and we're still enough to hear. And that might sound all deep and mythical, and no, it's real. Give yourself a moment of silence and stillness so that you can hear where you need to go. Because once you put that desire out into the atmosphere, it's going to rebound right to you. You're saying, I want to visit Africa. I don't know where to go. You can even voice that, because we're talking about acoustic intelligence. You're voicing that into the atmosphere. I don't even know where in Africa I want to go. Baby, that answer is going to be like, okay, boom, boom, boom. You know what I mean? You'll see it. It'll start coming to you. You'll just see a certain country or countries always in your face, always popping up, or something will pop in your mind. Oh, that's a place I want to visit. You know, there's so many videos on social media. We see the South African kids at high school, they're singing their songs. We see people in Uganda. We see everything going on. So we have to listen and pay attention. So that, my sister, that is what I would say to you. If you are not sure, there's so many places to visit and there's so many things to learn. We have so many years to try to absorb, but there's no pressure, right? Come see where you want to be. Not that place that you initially want to be. You will be led to the next place. We have to trust ourselves and trust that where we're supposed to be will be calling to us, and it knows that we're supposed to be there, and we'll get there. That's what I would say. That's advice I took for myself.
I love it. 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 I know that we could literally be on this particular platform with at least another good 2 hours.
Easily
another good 2 hours. And after the 2 hours, I'll be like, oh my God, I can't wait till I see sis again. Because I didn't get a chance to tell her this, this, and that either. You know, I guess at the end of the day, it's a whole vibration to be a Black woman who has unshackled the chain of America, who has found herself outside of the grasp of Canada, who has managed to squeeze between the greasy palms of the chokehold of the UK. It is a flex, is a vibratory place to recognize that the West is a very dangerous place for Black women, and that oftentimes our spiritual breakthrough, our journey, our deepest moments of understanding will have to come from outside of the country, because it is hard to heal in the same place that continues to traumatize you. It's hard to
It is.
heal when you're
Yeah.
still being traumatized every day by the environment's toxicity. If the toxicity level continues to stay at an all-time high, it is very hard to heal from the thing that is currently hurting you. Okay?
It
So
is.
I really want to just acknowledge that it is so beautiful to be able to hear from you, to learn from you, to have this type of conversation with you, because it's this healing thing is not for the weak. It's not for the weak, but there are things that we can do that really are on the other side of freedom that just make it a lot easier for us to find our way back to ourselves, to reclaim who we are at our core. So I want to just give you an open floor if there's anything that you want to say in closing. Now is a great time. If somebody's interested in talking to you or connecting with you, now is a really great time to let them know how they can do that. Please feel free, because you absolutely have the floor.
Absolutely. The first thing that I'd want to say is just expressing gratitude to you, because the first time that we met in person, when you came to Africa, you helped to shift my entire mindset. I had come there as a colonizer, and this is me being completely honest. You don't even recognize that you are coming as a colonizer, because that's the goal of the colonizer, to instill that colonization in you, and then you just go and do it. They don't even need to have a hand in it anymore. You just go, and the seeds of it, you just keep planting it. And I come almost with a battle axe in my hand, like, I'm gonna change this system and that system. And you politely but sharply told me not to bring that mess here. In the way that you do it, in the beautiful way that you flow, and I received it with not just open arms, but an open heart. And it truly changed my entire trajectory, like literally. And I've told you that before, but I want to do it in a public space to give you those flowers and that acknowledgement and express my sincere gratitude. And that is what I would say to anyone too who's coming, to make sure to connect to, yes, the woman who are in the place that you're going for sure, but also with America who get it, who understand what it takes to actually live and survive on the continent, because it's a whole different ballgame. So I wouldn't even be able to have that level of spiritual awakening, because the colonizer was blocking my mind, and I was coming there to clean up shop because they needed so much help from me. And it's just not the case. There's so much that I have to learn and so much I have to receive in that space. So I want to first just acknowledge that before I do my wrap up.
Yes, thanks and praise, sis. I really appreciate that. I definitely I didn't know that my approach could be described as sharp. I'm joking when I say that. I have been
I know
told
you
and
are.
told again. Yeah, because somebody right now is listening and saying, "Sharp, that is Queen Jamila Sharp." Yes, in real life. IRL, okay. I definitely have a very straightforward approach, and it's not always received. I say that as someone who is very committed to delivering the message that I will not be held responsible by anybody's ancestors or any other spiritual deities for a message that went undelivered. So we give thanks and praise that you were in a space and place to receive that, Lilac. We give thanks and praise for your humility and just for your open heart. We give thanks and praise for that. So
Serious
absolutely.
thanks and praise. Absolutely, it was so needed. But yeah, I think just to wrap up, I'm so grateful for this conversation, and I agree we could be here talking and sharing, just bouncing back and forth off of each other. I would really say that I am grateful for the journey that I've been on. It hasn't been easy. There's been a lot to deal with, just mentally. It's a detox that has to happen. But I also feel just grateful that I've been gifted this opportunity to spread my wings that were caged in the States. As free as people feel they are, there is definitely a level of boundness that it's just gonna happen on a, we're stolen people that were sent to a land that we weren't supposed to be in, you know what I mean? And not coming in the way that we're supposed to come. So there's always gonna be a level of boundness there. But when you break out of that, you can really stretch your wings and really be free. And so I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to share about that. And it is my sincere hope and wish that anyone listening and any amazing sister listening, would have that desire to spread your full wings. May that bloom in your heart, and may that bloom in your spirit, and may that bloom so much that it enables you to the point where you have to go and spread your wings somewhere. And you might be feeling the push. You want to move. You don't know how to do it. There are many resources and many ways to connect, with the age of technology. Many videos. I mean, you have a direct connect right to Goddess. Like, there, we're removing all excuses, and that's just me being as honest as possible. That if it's your time to go, answer the call, because you don't want to miss your window of opportunity. It's all about alignment and being in the right space at the right time. And some doors don't come back around. Some do, but some don't. And so you don't want to miss your door. And so, in order to connect with me, I'm happy to share with anyone. Give you the real deal. You know what I mean? Africa is not a utopia. It's a beautiful place you have to deal with, just like with anywhere else, right? And so I would never want to give anyone the unicorn and rainbows version, because you come over here with false expectations. So I'm happy to connect with anyone on social media. It's Lilac Calandra. Instagram, it's still Lilac Calandra, like underscore Calandra. And everywhere else is just Lala Calandra. On Facebook, I'm happy to connect, happy to talk to anyone who has questions about the move and what it takes, and just expressing any concerns, or like, sharing your real feelings about being scared or hesitant. Like, all those things are real, and we want to acknowledge every feeling. But if it's your time, it's your time. And no amount of excuses will stop it from being your time. And again, you don't want to miss your season. You don't want to miss your window, because there are versions of yourself that you need to meet, and you don't want to delay that. I would just encourage the sisters to walk heavy in the earth, and find yourself. And you, it is hard to find yourself in a place that in bondage in, and a burden in. So